Hello, and welcome to another episode of State of the Nova Nation. I'm Eugene Rappe. He's Chris Stanzial. Chris, I got some news for you.
What would that be, Eugene?
Got a lot of good news for you, actually.
Okay.
Well, first off, you know, last week I got some questions from people like, oh, why weren't you talking about the rankings? Or, you know, what happened to our rankings update? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, going into last week, we got booted from the top 75. We were still top 100. But as we've talked about before, we're not going to change the rules of the game midway through just because it doesn't suit us.
Right.
You know, we're not going to lower the bar. We're not going to say like, oh, our top 100 streak's still going and kind of pretend that we brushed to the side that we weren't top 75.
Right. We're still trying to remain elite.
Exactly. And after that week, we come into this week, Chris, on this bright Tuesday morning, back on Podomatic's top 75. We've been there now for 18 of the last 20 weeks.
18 out of 20. That sounds a lot like Villanova's free throws.
Yes, and it also sounds like the grades I used to get on my quizzes, 90%.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, you at least. Yeah.
Okay, that's a lie. That's a lie. Let's not kid ourselves. It wasn't all the time. Maybe for the cupcake classes.
Yeah, the freshman year cupcakes. Yeah. All right, I'll give you that. Not so much junior, senior.
Senior year, did I even go to class? Did I second semester even go to class?
Great question. I think you were just filming State of the Nova Nation for straight 4 months.
I would love to see the statistics on attendance for second semester seniors and to see if there are actually any second semester seniors that actually go to every single class because they deserve an award.
I'm not going to toot my own horn here, but I actually did. I missed
you didn't miss a class?
I missed one class voluntarily my entire 4 years.
Wow. Shout outs to you.
I skipped one class intentionally. That was it. Like every other time was either like I had like a project I had to work on or something. Like, I didn't actively say, yeah, I'm just not going to class.
When was that?
Freshman year, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got a good streak going.
It was something I kept under wraps because I didn't want to seem like a total dweeb.
But now that we're 11 months out, or what is it, 10 months out?
We're 10.
Yeah, 10 months. Mm-hmm. Chris is like, oh, everything's on wax now.
Yeah.
Everything's coming out.
It doesn't matter anymore. We're long past it. We've hit double digits of graduation now.
Don't remind me. But we've also, this past weekend, we got to celebrate the 11th month anniversary of a game that happened on April 4th. Nothing. You know, it was just a game.
I know. See, I'm happy. Like every like fourth of a corresponding month, like, you know, it's the anniversary and you know, that's great. That's great. But then you realize it's just a month farther away from what actually happened. And now it being March again, you realize the fun and games with that are kind of over. It's time to, you know, write a new story.
We have at least 1 week.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
I'd say even less. I'd say Thursday.
Unless if they go all the way.
Right. I'd say until Thursday, when the Big East tournament starts, I think that's when we got to be like, okay, you know, 2016 was fun and all, but that was 2016. It is now 2017. Time to move on. Don't want to be like some of the 1985 alumni.
That's going to be us. Let's be honest. That's going to be us.
I know. But still.
But I know exactly what you mean. The alumni who just flex being there in 1985.
Mm, my dad.
And then some of them were lucky to be there for both.
Yeah, I don't know anyone personally, but I've heard some stories.
So we got the Big East tournament coming up. And the last bit of good news that I have is that we are going to have college basketball analyst and reporter. She's fresh off of her Big East trophy tour across all 10 campuses. Might have seen her on Fox Sports 1, Big East Digital Network. Kim Adams will be joining us to help us break down the Big East tournament. We're going to have a little chat. We're going to talk. We're going to make some predictions. We're going to ask some questions. It's going to be a good time. Well, that'll be later on in the show.
It's going to be wonderful. Can't wait to pick her mind about the Big East.
But before we get there, we got some other things to talk about. First of all, Chris, he might not have won an island. He might not have won $1 million. But Tano Capasso turned a lot more heads than he did at the Senior Bowl this past weekend at the NFL Combine. What have you heard? What is the buzz like? How are you feeling about this? I saw he was getting a little hyped up by the NFL over the weekend.
Yeah, he was. He got two separate tweets, one for his bench press and one for his 40 time. I didn't watch the combine at all this past weekend. I try to avoid it because I just don't like it. I don't understand the point of it. I feel like it's overhyped, but I do feel that some people do care about it and the scouts do. So obviously, if you're going to do well, you're going to get hyped up for it. So seeing the NFL absolutely promote every little bit of the combine, but they only promote like a few players here and there. Like if you like, you know, John Ross, he just broke the 40 time in combine history. He ran like a 4.22 or something like that. So like only a few players are getting tweets. And then you see Tano getting two separate tweets for two of the biggest events there, the 40 and the bench press. And everyone is loving them. Like, and you see the replies to these tweets. Like, it's just a bunch of random fans from all different fan bases saying, we got to get this guy. He's going to help our pass rush. Like, all this type of stuff. And you're like, oh, this is great. And then I think even in the 40 time tweet, they actually threw in the Nova Twitter handle as well. So I'm like, oh, that's cool too. Some exposure.
Yeah, it's certainly awesome to see Villanova football, not basketball, right, not, you know, the other sports, but football, get a lot of love and get a lot of hype. Tano Capasseno ran his 40 in under 5 seconds, 4.83 seconds, and he also repped 225 pounds on the bench press 23 times.
That's nuts.
You repped 225 on the bench.
I haven't even attempted 225 my entire life. I've maxed out at like 205, 215, like somewhere in between there. But yeah, that was like when I was like heavier. Now that I've cut a lot of weight, I can barely, I'm barely hitting 200 now. You've touched 225.
I have. But that was way back, but pre-injuries.
Pre-turning into glass.
Yeah, the most I ever repped it was 5 times. Oof. But I'm sure if you asked me to rep 25 pounds, even my arms would probably just rip right off.
Five times. That's pretty good, though. That's pretty good. That's like better than Kevin Durant at his combine.
Oh, yeah, I know. But forget. Let's be honest. Anyone who takes lifting semi-seriously probably did better than Kevin Durant.
Yeah, that's true. Combine. But yet he's making multi-million dollars, and it doesn't matter.
And I have his backpack.
All right. Oh yeah, right.
I've personally fed to the machine.
Yes.
You got to think his draft stock is going to shoot up after this. I know it's just the combine, and it's basically the equivalent of, I know you hate it very much, but the John Gruden camp against pool noodles, dummies, on
air.
Don't get me
started on that. That's worse than the actual combine.
I know you're not a fan. You're not a fan.
No, that's brutal. But in regards to his draft stock, I mean, you got to think it goes up. I mean, all these scouts like are in love with this combine stuff, and if someone can jump really high as a lineman, I don't know, they like all get hyped for it. So I think he solidified himself as at least a second day pick. So you're looking probably like third round, but I think he might be able to sneak into the late second. And obviously you got to factor in team's needs. Like he can be somewhere high on your board, but if you're not drafting best player available and you already have like a nice 4-3 defensive lineman, you might pass up on him and then he falls a little bit. And that's just the way it happens. That's the draft. But I think he'll get a lot of second round grades. But realistically, I think he's probably going to end up as like a third round pick, which honestly, coming from this school, that's pretty impressive.
I certainly think you're right in that he has perfectly solidified. He's at least a third round pick. Like if there was any questions going in before, like I know people were like, oh, maybe he's third, maybe he's fourth. He's definitely at least a third. Mm-hmm. If he jumps anywhere past the second day, I'd be surprised. I do think he could probably sneak into the second round, just like at the end, tail end.
Yeah.
He'll probably sneak in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the rise of Ali Marpet, dude.
Your boy?
Yeah, total unknown going in, gets lots of love at the Senior Bowl, gets lots of love at the Combine.
And now he's protecting Jameis Winston.
Don't quote me on this, but I feel like he was the first – I think he was the first D3 player drafted.
Ever?
Or to go as high. He might be the highest drafted.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But Tano, the draft's going to be in Philadelphia this year.
Oh, true.
He's definitely going to get his name called.
See him like at home is like a giant party going on. That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, I'd rather see him at the new football facility. Yeah. He's in like one of the new meeting rooms with all his friends. Kampko is catering. John Kampko is there personally. Gives him a handshake. And he says, whenever you want a fat cat, it's on the house.
Right. got Tally there just like pounding back fat cats. Oh, that'd be great. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, Mark Ferrante is laughing like a mad scientist, marveling at his accomplishment and what he helped create.
It's like Dr. Franken with Frankenstein. It's alive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he just helped create this 6'7", 280-pound monster. 4% body fat.
That'll be some sight. But we'll keep an eye out for that.
We're definitely going to watch the draft. I mean, at least the first day, but we'll certainly be keeping an eye out for the second and third day for sure. Yeah. But he's definitely going to get his name called. I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
Right. He'll definitely be drafted. It's just a matter of where at this point.
If he goes to the Giants, I am buying his jersey.
Yeah, you definitely should.
A lot of teams want him. A lot of fan bases have been drooling over what he's achieved so far. So we're going to certainly keep an eye out for how he does in the draft, where he goes. We'll have time to watch.
Hashtag time to watch.
In the meantime, this past weekend, we saw the regular season finale of Villanova men's basketball. And we saw the Wildcats potentially, personally, drive the dagger into the John Thompson III era over there at Georgetown, handing the Hoyas their fifth straight loss. And it wasn't close. It was not close at all, Chris. It was not pretty. There are a lot of Hoya alum who are definitely freaking out right now.
Yeah, this game was a blowout like we predicted, but it was like it was a type of blowout where Georgetown just gave up. And that's when you know that the coach has absolutely lost his grip with the team. He's done. He has to be done. There is no way you can keep John Thompson III around anymore. And I'm saying this just as a concerned Big East fan. Georgetown should be one of the premier programs in this conference. And yet, ever since realignment, they've been middling like in mediocrity. And John Thompson is not making it any better. He's made some terrible recruiting decisions. Other than 2007 or 2007 or 2008 when they made the Final Four, no one has ever praised John Thompson for like anything. Yet here we are. It is the year 2017, almost 10 years removed from the Final Four. He has to go. And if they're afraid to fire him because of what his father did for the program, and they think that he's going to like destroy the administration and bash the school for doing that, then John Thompson II has to wake up and realize that his son just isn't that good of a coach. And I feel like he would be that type of guy to like say, yeah, you know what? He wasn't that good of a coach. He didn't get the job done. You know, had a lot of subpar years. It was the right move. But you never know. And I feel like that's what's holding Georgetown back from actually getting rid of this guy like 2-3 years ago as opposed to now.
If I'm a Georgetown alum, I'm very disappointed in the decline this program has taken in the last 4 years. Like you said, not only is this supposed to be one of the top programs in the conference, Georgetown's historic. It's supposed to be one of the top in the nation. They're about to suffer back-to-back losing seasons for the first time in decades. You just lost to your blood rival. Like, if that's not the exclamation point on this needs to be fixed, I don't know what is. Villanova beat them down 81-55. And just like you said, it seemed like no one cared outside of Rodney Pryor. And that's just a showing of where the culture has gone nowadays.
Very lackadaisical. No energy. It's hard to get behind a team like this, but the Verizon Center was quiet as anything. You could hear a pin drop in there and this is supposed to be their biggest game of the year, you know, last game of the regular season against your blood rival, like you said, and you put out a performance in which you get blown out by your rival in the biggest blowout they've suffered against Villanova since the 1949-1950 season. That's insane. And I know we're a Villanova podcast, so we should be praising Villanova for the play, and they played absolutely great, but Georgetown just gave up. They threw in the towel. No one had more than 6 points other than Rodney Pryor. Rodney Pryor had 21. No one else had more than six. Oh, I'm sorry. Jesse Govan had 7. I'm sorry.
Yes. Ooh. 1 point.
Oh, boy. Now, who knows? Maybe they get hot in the Big East tournament and then they win the whole Big East tournament. But that I don't think so. I think they'll probably get smashed by St. John's because they just want to mail it in.
Yeah, hot take. Should the Big East conspire to have one of the bottom three teams win so that they can guarantee 8 teams going to the NCAA tournament?
That would be bad.
that would be the weirdest thing that I've ever seen.
I mean, we thought it was weird when Providence won it all the first year of the new Big East, and they were like
that's the most forgotten fact. The fact that Providence beat Creighton to win the Big East tournament.
Exactly. Like, and they beat a good Creighton team too on top of it. It was like so odd and weird, but I feel like we were so removed from that tournament because of the loss to Seton Hall. We just kind of, whatever happened after the fact, we just kind of let go from our memories.
Exactly. But going back to Georgetown Villanova, another thing to just drive the point home. There were two guys on Villanova's roster who were potential Georgetown recruits from the DMV area, their own backyard. Chris Jenkins, Josh Hart, snubbed. Snubbed by the Hoyas. Jenkins waited for a scholarship offer, was ready to go to Georgetown, but he never got that offer, so ended up going to Villanova instead. Josh Hart gets offered, but they don't accept his commitment. So then he ends up going to Villanova. One becomes a national championship hero. The other is looking at Big East Player of the Year, potential national player of the year, and they just dropped, they just led the Wildcats in scoring, combining for 40 points on your team that's now falling off by the wayside. That's got to hurt if you're a Georgetown alum.
Yeah, I think it hurts even. Yeah, it definitely drives the dagger in even more. We talked about this last time, I think, how just Josh Hart and Chris Jenkins just always go off against Georgetown, and we absolutely think it's because of the snubs. And here we are yet again talking about Chris Jenkins and Josh Hart going off against Georgetown. It's so automatic. I love it. And I think, semi-hot take here, I think this performance from Josh Hart probably gets the Wooden Award. I don't know about you. I'm not saying you beat Georgetown, you put up 21 against Georgetown. Ooh, you're a Wooden Award winner. I think this is going to be the one that kind of propels him to the Wooden Award, because I think he's come Big East tournament time. I think he's just going to take off.
That is a hard take that I don't think I'm going to touch that. I'm going to let you. I'm going to let you cook. I'm going to let you cook.
Okay.
I'm going to let you cook.
All right. Well, it's sitting there. It's fresh off the griddle. It's hot.
We had four Wildcats scoring double figures. Hart led the way with 21, Jenkins 19. Brunson added 17. Bridges had 12. On the Georgetown side, 20 turnovers. You're not going to win games when you're giving up 20 turnovers. And also, after the game, Josh Hart was asked if there was anything special about playing Georgetown or coming back home to the D.C. area. And he just said, oh, it's just a regular game, man. I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I believe that. It's just a regular game.
Nah, it's not. It's just part of the attitude talk that they have going. I don't believe that for 1 minute.
Another good thing was that Villanova got to see, for the first time since God knows when, an 8-man rotation.
Yeah, Dylan threw in 9 minutes. Didn't score, but, you know, he played 9 minutes, and that's all you can ask for. Because we need fresh legs come this time. And obviously with the 8-man rotation means that Darryl Reynolds finally has come back, contributed 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and even 2 steals, which you don't really see from a big guy. Didn't score, but honestly, that's fine. Just to have him back out there, get his game legs under him, and he'll be ready for the Big East tournament in March. Man, this is great to see. I'm glad he's okay.
Definitely much needed piece going in. You definitely want your size. You want your big man. You want your height. You're going to have a tough time. If you don't have that big guy anchoring the paint, it's just not going to be fun. But now, the regular season is over. The conference seating is locked in. The brackets are out. Have you taken a look at them?
Yes, I have looked at the brackets, but I am deathly terrified of our potential semifinal matchup, assuming we beat St. John's or Georgetown. We have to play the winner of Seton Hall Marquette. Marquette we already lost to this year, and they're playing very well. And Seton Hall, who we've beaten by 30, both games, but yet here I am saying I'm definitely afraid of them because it's the Big East tournament and it's Seton Hall.
Yeah, I remember the last time we destroyed blue Seton Hall out of the water and then had to play them in the Big East tournament before the finals, and it did not go well. It did not go well.
No, we got Sterling Gibbs.
Yeah, it was a terrible way. It just ruined my lunch. It ruined the rest of the class during that day. I remember that day. I'll be honest. I think I skipped class after that because I was so sad.
That's cute, man. That's cute.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That is not a joke at all.
I had a break on Thursday, second semester, sophomore year, between like 11:30 and like, when was it? 11:30, like 2:30. So it actually worked out well because the game was at 12 and I watched the whole game just by myself in my room because I didn't really have much going on. And yeah, I just face palmed on my desk.
I had class during the second half of that game, or like a good chunk of the game, majority of the game, hour and a half class.
Mm-hmm.
And It was obvious. All the kids were on their laptops streaming it. I was streaming it. There were no I sat in the back, and there were no laptops that weren't trying to stream it.
Mm-hmm.
And after like 5 minutes of teaching, this professor is like, "Screw it! Where's the link so I can watch the cats?" But pulls down the projector. We're watching it on the big screen, only to be let down at the end of class. And then I was like, "Nope, not gonna be able to do it. Not gonna be able to do it."
Yeah, that was just that was a rough day.
But enough about the past. Let's not look back there. Let's kind of look at something a little more current in Milwaukee, in good old cold Milwaukee, in your second favorite state, well, probably third favorite, after New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Yes.
The Big East tournament for the women's basketball was held at Marquette. Marquette got to host this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Villanova took on St. John's in the quarterfinals. They swept the Red Storm in the regular season. This time around, we saw a different result.
Yeah, Villanova got a wallop. St. John's 56, Villanova 40. And as we were saying, all year, this team relies on three-point shooting, and they needed to make three-pointers to even stand a chance against these better teams. And they went 3 of 22 from deep, and from the field, they were a whopping 16 of 51. That is sleeping in the streets. That is why Villanova is going home early in the Big East tournament. And also, it's pretty hard to beat a team three times in a year. And I know St. John's was technically the 5 seed and Villanova was the 4, but St. John's was heavily favored going into both games against Villanova. And even in this game, you have to think that even though they are higher seeded, it's still, you're going to have to still play a pretty good game to beat these guys. Pretty unfortunate that they just had to have one of the worst shooting nights of the year.
What was tough was that both teams go in tied at 23 going into the half,
mm-hmm.
come out in the third quarter. Villanova just looked overwhelmed.
Yeah.
They were outscored 21-6. They shoot just 25% on the floor for that quarter. Meanwhile, St. John's is lights out, 7 of 11. You put up 21 points in a quarter. That's a lot, especially when you can hold your opponent to just 6. Not going to win many games like that. Villanova was just cold all game long from deep, 3 of 22, 13.6%.
No one on the team had more than one made 3. Rattling off some numbers here, 0 of 5, 0 of 3, 1 for 6, 1 for 4. Right there, those numbers are from 4 of the 5 starting lineup. So if your starters aren't playing well, that means your bench is probably not going to be playing well. And as a result, they got blown out. I mean, I guess you can say, well, they'd be playing DePaul next, so it would be kind of tough for the next game anyway. But you'd like to see them at least sweep St. John's because, as we said before, St. John's was, I think, predicted 3rd in the Big East in preseason. So, I mean, they were a good team, and it would have been a real nice stepping stone for Villanova going into next year to sweep one of the upper echelon teams in the Big East.
St. John's was pretty good, and Villanova beat them twice this season. It would have been great to see them beat them a third time to bolster that postseason resume. Because right now, the record's a little shaky. Right now, they're 16-14, slightly above 500, which I feel like is a bare minimum to get to a postseason conversation. I'm not entirely sure of how the WNIT works or how the NIT works in general when it comes to selecting teams. Obviously, you go for the teams that just missed the cut of 64, 68 schools. But for the women's tournament, I'm not exactly sure how they select who goes in, who goes out. And obviously, some schools decline the NIT. They don't opt to participate. But Villanova's been there the last couple of years. And like you said, you look at Villanova's stat lines. Their best performer came off the bench. No starter, scored over 7 points. Mary Gadaka had 12 points, 7 rebounds, 6 of 9 on the floor. She seemed to be the only one getting it going at all. But that's tough when you try to have one person single-handedly carry you out of such a big double-digit deficit.
Yeah, you can't just rely on one person for that. And it showed what happens when you lean too much on one person. But I do want to go back to your NIT point. It is possible they can make the NIT. I mean, you don't know. The women's NIT, I want to point out, is actually 64 teams. It's just as big as a regular tournament. I mean, anything's possible. Villanova is a mainstay in the NIT for the past few years, so maybe they'll give some credence to that and reward this team of victories of the past and of this year to see how well they turned it around. Maybe they'll give some credence to that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. This isn't like the men's NIT where it's literally the first 32 teams that didn't make it and get thrown in. This is just a smorgasbord of teams from like everywhere.
The thing is if you look at Villanova, they made the NIT, I believe it was the 2011-2012 season. with just a 17-13 record, and you know, it's just a one game difference now. So I think they can make it. I would love to see them play some postseason basketball. I think they deserve to at least make the NIT. I love the way that they turned it around the second half of the season when they had that 6-game win streak that really propelled them to above 500 in Big East play. They played pretty well in conference play. Turned it around after a rough non-conference stretch in which they were trying to find their identity, trying to find out where they were on the court, just how this team functioned, how this team gelled, went through the bumps and bruises, played very well towards the midway point. Turn themselves around, really. And sure, they lost to DePaul. Sure, they lost to Creighton and Marquette. But those are some of the top teams around. Those teams are probably going to go to the NCAA tournament. They played tough, and I do think that they deserve at least an NIT berth.
I'd have to agree with you on that.
We'll certainly keep an eye out. I personally don't think this is the end of the season just yet. But we will see. We shall see. 64 teams in the NIT is a lot, and I feel like they have to get at least one of those berths. And also, postseason basketball would be, you know, that's an extra game, maybe even two, that you get to have with your team on the court. And this is a young team that doesn't have very many seniors, so a lot of the core pieces will be back next season. The more time you guys get to work with to gel together, the better it is for the team, especially when you're looking ahead and building on what you've done this year.
Right, that's actually a good point, and I wanted to bring that up myself. If they do get into the NIT, that is a postseason game. That is postseason experience, and that will definitely help this young team going down the road. And if they do make the NCAA next year, they'll be like, oh, well, we were kind of here last year. We know what the postseason is like. Granted, it's kind of a different stage, but they know what it's like. They know what it's about. So, yeah, exactly. I think they need this postseason experience, and it would be great for everyone.
We'll keep an eye out for Harry Preda and his girls and the women's basketball team. And when the field is announced in about a week or so, we'll keep an eye on the brackets. We'll keep an eye out on their season. Hopefully it extends. I really think it will personally. I hope I'm not wrong. You know, I'd like to see it keep on going. As we transition over to the men's side, before we talk about the men's Big East tournament, before we dial up our guests, I just wanted to talk about there were some awards handed out this past weekend, Chris. There were some accolades, some honors, you know, some cool things to add on your resume, certificates, plaques to put in the trophy case, little trophy. Okay, maybe they aren't little. Maybe they're not little. They're actually pretty big. It's actually a pretty big deal.
It's a big deal. I would agree with that.
So on Sunday, the Big East announced its all-conference teams. We saw first-team selections for Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson, an honorable mention for Chris Jenkins, and an all-freshman team selection for Dante DiVincenzo. Those four Wildcats are on the all-conference teams for the 2016-2017 season. When you saw them and where they were placed, how did you feel about them and also the conference as a whole?
All right, first of all, I want to make a point. Why are there six people on the teams? I thought it would be five.
There's five, but if there's a tie for the fifth, they leave both of them on.
Oh, so how? Oh, wow. All right, I didn't know that. Okay, I guess that makes sense. But who tied? Do we know who tied?
Yeah, the two people who tied were Xavier's Trayvon Blewett and Butler's Andrew Schrabis. Brunson and Hart were both unanimous selections, so they were in the clear. They were in the clear.
How is Schrabis on the first team? I don't understand. Trayvon Blewett should just be left alone and not be in any sort of tie with Andrew Schrabis. Come on, that's ridiculous. I mean, Schrabis is a good player. I'm not knocking him with that. He's very good, but he's not first team. I mean, come on. Maybe you take off Bullock and put Schrabis down on second team, or at least have a tie for second team. I don't understand that. But this is a Villanova podcast, so I'm going to talk about Villanova. Josh Hart, Jalen, unanimous, perfect. I have no problems with that, obviously. And Chris Jenkins is honorable mention. I get it. I don't think he should have been first or second team, but he did tweet out, I don't know if you saw this, he tweeted out the tweet the Big East said of him making the honorable mentions, and he just put noted. And I think he actually did that with when someone else was giving him biz on Twitter, something about only playing in Europe. I think we talked about it a few weeks ago. Yes. So that gets me hyped because maybe he's focused and will actually come out like the old Chris Jenkins of old in March. So we'll see what happens with that. And Dante on the Big East freshman team. Yeah, I like Dante much more than I used to, especially at the beginning of this podcast when we first started up. We weren't the biggest proponents of him, so I'm glad he got this honor. But I don't know how I feel about him, the all-freshman team. I feel that the five above him, Baldwin, Patton, Howard, Pons, Levette, they all kind of deserve it. And I mean, Dante's good, but I guess there's only so many freshmen in the league that I guess he kind of just made it on default.
If I may note, Dante DiVincenzo tied with Marcus Howard.
What?
They were the only non-unanimous selections.
That I don't get. I'm sorry. No offense to Dante, but Marcus Howard blows him out of the water. I didn't even – how is Marcus Howard not unanimous? I would have had him in front of everyone. Maybe not Patton, but definitely ahead of everyone else.
In terms of Shravis, I'm just going to briefly touch on this. He is not first-team All-Big East. I don't even think he's the best center in the league. I would put Justin Patton over him. I think he should have been at least – maybe him and Patton switch spots.
Okay.
Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, perfect. Perfect just the way that is.
Yeah.
Chris Jenkins, honorable mention. It's a drop from where he was. I get it. I understand. Just like you said, he's shooting below 40% from the floor and from three-point range. His offensive efficiency rating, according to KenPom, is actually the lowest of his four-year career. And he had a little bit of a slump in the middle of conference play. So I get it. I do still think he's good, and I'm glad he at least got an honorable mention. I think if he got left off completely, there would have been a firestorm. But I understand. With Dante DiVincenzo, I'm a little torn. I feel like he does a lot defensively. Okay. I don't think his numbers are – they don't compare. This isn't even an opinion thing. You just look at the numbers, stack them up against the other five on that list.
I know.
They don't compare. Like, they just don't.
They don't at all. And I'm just like I get it. But, like, I don't get it. he does good things, and his improvement throughout the year is impeccable. I honestly didn't expect it the way he was playing at the beginning of Big East play. Like, I thought he was a lost cause for most of the season. But I don't think he deserves to be on the – I don't know. I can't. I can't anymore. I can't. It's – I'm at a loss for words because I don't know how to phrase it. It's like – it's so 50-50. I can't make my bias says, yeah, put him on. I don't care. He's Villanova. Villanova deserves all the awards for everything. I mean, it's Villanova. But at the same time, it's like, it's not like he robbed anyone of a spot, right? Like, can you name another freshman out there? No. So, like, I guess that's okay. This isn't like an egregious F up by the coaches.
No, of course. No, I would agree. That's actually a good point to bring up. I would say that this is the best six freshmen the Big East has to offer,
yeah.
And I think the drop-off from 6 to 7 is very big, so I would understand including all of them. Now that you put it like that, I get it.
I guess, yeah.
But Marcus Howard...
Marcus Howard shouldn't be tied with him is what I'm trying to get at.
I think Marcus Howard, he shot over 50% from deep for, like, the longest time, scoring machine. He's only, like, 5'11", hanging with the big boys.
Mm-hmm.
Shamori Pons, Marcus Levette, the best backcourt tandem of youngsters that the Big East has to offer, and both are put up great numbers, carried St. John's to being somewhat respectable. They were in the basement for a while, and then they decided midway through conference play, like, no, we're better than this. Come on, Baldwin killed Nova.
He did.
And he's a pest off the bench. He's great. And he's really good defensively, too.
He is.
Justin Patton, no questions.
Right.
But you know what? Now that you put it like that, Chris, I don't really have that many problems with it anymore. Because this is actually the best six, and seventh, whoever's in seventh doesn't even come close.
Right. I just don't understand how Dante ties with Marcus Howard. Jesus. That's something I just can't wrap my head around.
That was on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday afternoon, right around lunchtime, the Big East announced some more awards.
Okay.
It announced the Big East Defensive Player of the Year, the Big East Sixth Man of the Year, the Most Improved Player, and the Sportsmanship Award. And for the first time ever in Big East history, three players are sharing the Defensive Player of the Year award, and that'll be Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges, and Kyrie Thomas. Go.
I don't know how there's a three-way tie. There's someone abstaining from a vote. There's someone else must have got a vote. To be honest with you, I don't get Josh Hart there. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't get it. I understand how great of a player he is. We've watched him for 4 years, and he's a great player, and he's a great defensive player, but I don't think he deserves the title over Bridges and Thomas. I don't get it. I think you should have gave it to either Bridges or Thomas, and if you had to split it, but like, I don't like split titles, especially three-way split.
That's obscene. Yeah.
I mean, can't you just flip a coin at that point? I mean, come on. And is there like, can't the commissioner like submit a vote to like overrule everyone? Like, can you do that?
Executive order.
Yeah, exactly. Please. I mean,
Val.
Here's your ballot, but I don't fill out ballots. Well, here's a ballot. So I guess like, all right, I'm glad Josh got it, and I'm glad Bridges got it, but it should have been between Bridges and Thomas, and heck, I might have even gave it to Thomas because we were lauding his defensive play just the last game Villanova played against Creighton. And I think he did a lot of heavy work once Watson went down. So, I mean, I feel like he should have been the rightful owner of that, to be honest with you.
For one of the newspapers I write for, they asked me to pick a player of the year for the local college and also high school level. Mm-hmm. And I'm torn between two people, but if there's one thing I despise, and I'm holding myself to the standard because I hate it, or I shouldn't say hate, but I don't like it when committees do this. It's the co-players of the year. You know what I mean? Like, you can pick one. Just pick one. But when you have three, that's just obscene. How? How did you guys let this happen?
I mean, really, like, come on.
I think Bridges is fantastic defensively. He's got the third most steals in the league. He's up there in the top 10 for steal rate, according to KenPom in the conference. He's, you know, wingspan. He's got, like, what, 10-foot wingspan?
At least.
12, growing, Inspector Gadget, go-go gadget arms. Josh Hart, he's pretty good. You know, I think he's a great all-around player, but I feel like, if anything, they should have split it between Thomas and Bridges. But here's a conspiracy theory for you.
Oh,
what if this is all just the quote-unquote consolation prize because someone else is going to get Big East Player of the Year?
Oof. I don't like it. I feel like, all right, I can get behind that, actually. But I feel like they would have just gave it to him outright then. I don't think some coaches would have been compensating for Defensive Player of the Year because of that. I don't know. I don't, well, do you believe it?
I don't know. I'm just a man with crazy ideas.
Oh, God. and I was going to actually ask you who you want. Not who you want, but who you think is going to win Big East Player of the Year. And so I guess that kind of feeds into that. Who do you think is going to win Big East Player of the Year?
It's, for me personally, it's between Josh Hart and Angel Delgado. If neither of those names appear on Wednesday when they announce who gets Big East Player of the Year, I will be very disappointed. I do think Josh Hart should get it, but what Angel Delgado should not be, what he's doing should not be ignored. The man is a double-double machine. Mm-hmm. The numbers he's putting up is insane. He's the top rebounder in the country.
Yeah.
And he's averaging well into double figures in scoring too. And he's single-handedly anchor of the paint for Seton Hall. I do feel though that maybe if Seton Hall was a much better team with a much better record, then I feel like the case for him being Big East Player of the Year is certainly comparable to Hart. But I feel like at the end of the day, we'll go to Josh Hart, not only for what he's done individually, but also what he's helped lead Villanova to do, another Big East regular season title, fourth straight.
Yeah, that I have the same sentiments with you on that. I feel it should go to Josh, but you just don't know. I mean, just look at 2 years ago. We all thought Hilliard was going to win, and that didn't end up happening. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, but Delgado, if Delgado gets it over Josh Hart, I would not be upset, even though I despise Delgado and Seton Hall and everything they stand for. I will not be upset because he's a good player. There's no denying that. He's a dominant player. And he's kept Seton Hall afloat, and it will probably get them into the tournament.
In regards to the Darren Hilliard not getting Big East Player of the Year, that is a conversation that I will gladly have with anyone off air, over Twitter, or wherever. And I will tell you, while I understand where the Big East was coming from, I completely disagree with the choice.
I thought he split with Hilliard.
No, he didn't. Hilliard didn't even touch it.
Do I just have like revisionist history in my head? Just like, yes. just trying to repress the bad memory.
Some other Big East awards, aside from Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year went to Andrew Rousey of Marquette.
Wow.
Most Improved Player went to Kyron Cartwright of Providence. and the Sportsmanship Award went to Billy Garrett Jr. of good old DePaul Blue Demons for putting up with the 4 years of pain, sweat, tears, and trials and tribulations.
Yeah, a lot of tears, I'm assuming there. A lot of tears. And yeah, that is the Lifetime Achievement Award. Congrats to Billy Garrett Jr. on that. I was not expecting Rousey to win Sixth Man of the Year, but then again, I don't know of any Sixth Man who could have potentially competed with that. Maybe Eastman, but I don't know if he started enough. Did he start, like, too much?
That's a good question, actually. Yeah, because I was thinking about maybe Keith and Savage or Kamal Baldwin over at Butler, but then they kind of dipped in the starting lineup, too. So, yeah, maybe that's why they were ineligible. Maybe after, like, a certain amount of starts, you can't qualify for the award anymore. But I do like Rousey. I do think he's pretty good for Marquette. He is a sharpshooter who can score a ton. I mean, he put up over 1,200 points at UNC Asheville in just 2 seasons. That's crazy. He can shoot. He can drive. He's not afraid to rumble in contact. I like it. You know, no one else is coming to my mind right now.
No, I can't think of one person either. I think a better comparison for him would be Steve Novak, going off the Marquette theme there.
Okay, well, Steve Novak didn't even play defense. Steve Novak couldn't even handle the ball. The second he dribbled the ball, I'm sure he was in trouble.
Okay, all right, fine. All right, offensively, you Steve Novak. All right, fine. I'm sorry, I suggested that.
Steve Novak, you're a power forward. Do you even know how to post up?
Yeah, that was technically his position. God, he was just literally the epitome of just stand behind 3-point line. We'll give you the ball every now and then. And he made millions of dollars doing it. What a life.
Makes me wonder why Ethan Raggy couldn't do that.
You know, honestly, I think about that sometimes. I don't understand how he couldn't get a job anywhere.
You know what the difference was? Unfortunately for him, he got injured after, you know, he graduated. So I don't know if that kind of thwarted his whole summer league or NBA team tryout stuff.
Right.
But that's such a shame. Like, if Steve Novak can do it, that guy from – few years back, what was the name? Jason Capono. He was like another 3-point specialist.
Whoa, what a throwback. Great name.
But yeah, those guys could get careers, cash some checks in the NBA for just shooting threes and doing nothing else. I don't understand why Ethan Raggy couldn't do it.
He did have a good shot, so who knows?
There'll be more awards announced tomorrow. Just before the game start, the opening round game start of the Big East tournament. We'll be keeping an eye out on that. Right now, congratulations to Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, Jalen Brunson. And I'll say congratulations to Chris Jenkins, even though he's probably upset with just getting – he probably feels a little snubbed right now. I don't even think he – you know, it's kind of like when you won something but you don't want it. You don't want it, people, to congratulate right. you on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we get deeper into this chat, we can't do it without our esteemed guests, and we're really excited to have her on the air. It kind of happened as like a shot in the dark on Twitter, and I'm glad it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can get this going again. Chris, let's dial up the phone. Let's see if we can get this working. So as promised, we're going to have a guest today join us, and we are thankful to have Kim Adams, a Big East correspondent, join us today here on State of the Nova Nation. Kim, how's your day going?
My day is good so far. Thank you, Eugene and Chris, for having me on. I'm always excited to talk Big East hoops with anybody, so especially as we're getting closer to the tournament. Really looking forward to it next week.
So you just finished with your Big East trophy tour. How was that? How was it like visiting all 10 campuses?
Yeah, the Big East trophy tour was pretty incredible. So the Big East started it kind of as a promotion for the 35th year of the tournament at Madison Square Garden. So I got to go to a game at every school, and it was so fun for me because I'd been covering the Big East for, this is my third season now, but I had never really been able to get out to the schools in the Midwest. I'm from New York, so I'd been to games at all the schools on the East Coast, but had kind of, you know, had made friends with Twitter people and fans, and they were always asking me, when are you coming to Butler or Xavier or Creighton? So I finally was able to make it out there, and it was just amazing. I mean, most of the games ended up being some of the best games of the season. Pretty much all of them came down to the wire. I'm pretty sure it kind of became the running joke. Like, if we were there with the trophy, it was guaranteed that it was going to be a great game. So it was so cool just to finally see all the venues, and every venue is so different in the Big East. It's like really hard to even rank them when people would say like, oh, what's been your favorite venue? Cause you have, you know, a place like the CenturyLink Center where you feel like you're kind of at an NBA game. It's 18,000 people sold out. And then you have a place like Hinkle Fieldhouse, which is so historic and kind of reminded me of where I played in college at the Palestra, like just two very historic venues. So it was just so cool to finally see the venues, see some great games, talk with a lot of fans who are so passionate about their teams. It'll be great to wrap it up next week or this week at the Garden.
Yeah, it seems like they knew whenever you were coming into town, they were like, oh, let's make it a good show. Let's make it a great show for King. I know you said it's hard to rank the different environments, the different arenas. Who's your favorite mascot? Can you at least give the fans of that?
Ooh, favorite mascot. I'll tell you who's not my favorite mascot first. That is Friar Dom. he's a great guy, but he's always been a little scary to me. And I'll shout out my good friend Kaylee Griffin, a Providence alum, because she loves Friar Dom.
Oh,
he always freaks me out a little bit. I mean, is it Tripp from Butler? I mean, he's a live mascot. He came and visited the trophy on the trophy tour. Butler blew the third. I think I may have to go with him. He's just, oh, he's so great. I met him. He stood up on the table, took a picture with the trophy. I think I got to give it to Butler blew the third.
See, Eugene wanted a specific answer because he has an infatuation with the blue blob.
Now, I know
Blue Blob's the unofficial mascot, but still.
Blue Blob, I'm trying to think I don't know if I've ever formally met the Blue Blob. But yeah, I guess it's interesting. He is the unofficial mascot. The Xavier fans last tournament gave me a Blue Blob hat, a winter hat of the Blue Blob. So
that's awesome.
Oh, man.
That's great. Oh, man. That's fantastic.
Eugene, you got to get on that. You got to buy one.
So the Big East regular season wrapped up this past weekend. The tournament brackets are out. What's your overall reaction to the seeding and where various teams are right now going into the tournament?
Yeah, I think it's how it unfolded is just crazy with how much those middle of the pack seeds were able to change. Looking at the bracket right now, I think it's crazy that Creighton could have been as high as number three, and then it looked like they were going to be playing in that 4-5 game, and then when Seton Hall beat Butler, it bumped them down to the 6th seed. So, I mean, I guess they're still in that 3-6 game just as the number 6 seed, but the tournament is going to be crazy. Like, I could really see 6 teams that could make the championship. There's just so many teams playing very well right now. I think a lot of it is going to come down to individual matchups. But, I mean, you look at Providence, I mean, I think that's kind of the biggest story of the seeding and the brackets is how they were picked 9th in the preseason. They weren't looking very good early on in Big East play. And then I think they've won their last 6 games and have just knocked off a bunch of the top teams and somehow got the number 3 seed. So I think that's kind of the biggest story. Marquette, I think, is playing really well right now. I think they're such a dangerous team with how they can shoot the ball on any given night and how many people they have that can shoot the ball well. So I think the bracket is just really interesting. I think once you get to the quarterfinals, anyone can win those 4 games. I know this is a Nova podcast. I think that they'll roll to the semifinals. But any of those other 3 quarterfinal games are going to be really good games. And I think anybody could win those quarterfinal games. So it's just with how many teams that are playing well right now. I mean, Seton Hall going into Butler and knocking them off on their senior night. That was crazy. So it's just going to be so interesting. I honestly have no idea what's going to happen.
So, Kim, you brought up a good point with Providence, how, you know, predicted to finish 9th in the beginning of the year, finished 3rd.
So I want to ask you, what do you think was more of a surprise? Would it be Providence jumping from 9-3, or would you say it's the fall of Xavier, just the absolute collapse that happened post Sumner injury, and the fact they were predicted to finish second in the Big East and even receive the first place vote?
I think Providence is a little more surprising, to be honest. I definitely think Xavier was hit extremely hard with the Edmund Sumner injury. I think what a lot of people didn't realize coming into the season with Xavier was how much of an impact Jalen Reynolds and James Farr had last year, and what a big loss that was going to be. Obviously, you have Fluitt, you have Sumner, you have Makura, and kind of the question all along for them this season was who else is going to step up? And they've had some people do that, but I don't think people realize just how good those two were last year for them and how it kind of added to their overall depth and strength at every single position on the floor. So they have that exceptional backcourt of those three guys we named, but then when Sumner goes down, I think just from my experience as a player, the hardest position to replace is point guard, because everyone on the floor is comfortable with a point guard. When your point guard goes down, you kind of lose that comfortability and you don't have the same flow on offense. So, I mean, I think that injury just really hit them hard, and they've just kind of been trying to find, you know, a sort of flow on offense and trying to find their shooters. So, I mean, but they're still a dangerous team once they get into the tournament. I mean, we've seen Trayvon Blewett go off a few times this season. I think it was 40 points against Cincinnati. Yeah. Anytime you have a player that can just go off like that, you can win a tournament game in a winner-go-home situation. So, yeah, I mean, I think they were hit hard, but they're dangerous. They're still dangerous. But, yeah, Providence, I mean, I think they've been the biggest surprise in the Big East. You lose two NBA draft picks, a top five NBA draft pick in Chris Dunn, and everyone had kind of written them off. I think it's just such a testament to Coach Cooley, just from my trophy tour game with him, actually, where they had a sitting during the game was right behind the bench, and coaches the entire time to the players on the bench, everything that's going on, he's breaking it down to the players on the bench, even if they're not going to get in the game. So I think I've seen him coach for a long time now, because dad is a men's basketball official and reffed him a ton when he was at Fairfield in the MAC. So I went to a bunch of their games, and he's just such a good coach, a good teacher. And I mean, you take that group on paper, you don't think that they would be that good in the Big East, but what he's been able to do with them and kind of adapt to their strengths and their weaknesses, I mean, that's the sign of a good coach, is making the best of what you have. What he's been able to do with that team is incredible, and they are certainly going to have a lot of momentum coming into the Garden, and a team that not too many other people want to see right now.
Yeah, I personally think Villanova is fortunate to have Providence on the other side of the bracket, because for a while they're on that 4-5 game, and I thought that they would put Villanova on upset alert and probably knock them off in the semis, so I think the Cats should be glad to not see them with that momentum they're coming in with.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, because I was curious, and I asked this question on my Twitter, and I said, who is the team that, as a fan, that you wouldn't want to see right now? And the amount of varied responses I got was incredible. I mean, I got Villanova, Butler, Creighton, Marquette, Providence, St. John's. Pretty much every team seeded like 1 through 8 was named multiple times. And I think that just shows how the depth of this conference, and I don't think I mentioned Seton Hall. Seton Hall was named too. But I was just kind of like amazed seeing how many different teams people are afraid of. And I think it really comes down to the matchup. So, you know, Butler fans are terrified of Creighton because Creighton crushed them twice, but then Villanova lost to Butler twice. So it's crazy just kind of how the season unfolded, how the matchups work with different teams. I think Creighton lucked out actually by Seton Hall winning that game, because I don't think they want to face Marquette again. They've gotten beat pretty badly by Marquette, including yesterday. So if they had been in that 4-5 game with them, I don't think they would have been looking forward to that. But unfortunately, the reward is having to face Providence, who I think is a better matchup for them, but they are playing as well as anyone in the conference. So the way just the seedings have worked out, there's no easy game. It's It's just insane. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. It really speaks to the versatility of this conference. And if you're looking at bracketology from Joe Lunardi, he currently has 7 Big East teams in, which is just crazy to think about. That's 70% of the conference. And, you know, for so much flack that this conference got ever since realignment, it's kind of crazy to think that we could potentially send 7 teams in with, you know, some of them lower end, like you got Seton Hall, Marquette, Providence as like last 4 in or whatever. But if they make some noise in the Big East tournament, they can potentially roll into the NCAA tournament with that.
Yeah, I definitely think those 7 teams deserve to be in. I think the team that's been slipping a little bit is Xavier. I think, yeah, he has them as his last 4 in.
Yeah.
I think, thank God they won that game against DePaul.
Yeah, that would have been a death sentence.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I think those 7 teams are deserving of being in. I think I saw an article yesterday, I think someone at CBS said kind of the games broke perfectly for the Big East case to get 7 teams in. Because Seton Hall, you know, could have used one more boost. Obviously, Butler's going to be in, but mm-hmm. a signature win for Seton Hall helped their case. Providence, you know, kind of on the bubble, got another big win. Marquette got another big win. So I personally think all 7 of those teams deserve to be in. I think any of those 7 teams could win a first round game. And then you just think 70% of the conference is just incredible. I think, you know, last year we had a lot of good individual players. We obviously had Villanova win the national championship. They were just a well-rounded team. But I think this year's Big East, you're seeing better teams. The depth of the conference is stronger this year. Maybe you don't have the top 5 draft pick in Chris Dunn, but you have 7 really good teams, 7-8 really good teams that battled all throughout conference play and beat up on each other. And I think the games that the battle that you face in conference play is really going to help come tournament time. I mean, these teams are used to going down to the wire multiple games a year. They're used to facing really tough competition. So I think 7 teams deserve to be in, and 7 of those teams can win a first round game and move on. And then I think obviously a few teams are suited for a deep run in March like we had last year.
I saw, I believe it was Team Ranking. They had Villanova as a 47% chance to win the Big East tournament. My first question to you is, do you take Nova or do you take the field? What does Villanova need to do to get back to the Big East tournament final? And what should they watch out for?
The thing with Villanova, first of all, what they've done this year with such a limited rotation continues to amaze me. They've really been playing 7 guys all season. With the injury to Phil Booth, and even in the past few games, they were really going with 6 guys without Daryl Reynolds. So first of all, that has just amazed me. I do think it's hard. it's hard to say with the 2 Butler losses. Like, I think on paper, they should be the best team. They should get back to the Big East championship. I think they have the intangibles, the experience, the leadership. They're a team that very rarely makes mistakes in late game. Coach Wright, obviously just an amazing coach, but they're a team that very seldomly beats themselves. You really have to beat them. Looking at the bracket, I mean, I think if they face Marquette again, I don't think any team in the field wants to see Marquette right now. Not assuming that, you know, Marquette is going to beat Seton Hall, but Marquette is shooting as well as anyone or better than anyone in the country right now. And that's a real danger when you get into a win or go home situation. On the opposite side, if you are a team that relies so heavily on the 3, your 3 might not be on that day. And do you have other ways to score? So I think if Villanova meets Marquette in the semifinals, that's going to be a really tough test for them just because of how well they can shoot the ball. If they do get to the championship, we're looking on the other side of the bracket. I mean, this is what's so crazy. I could see Butler in the championship game. I could see Providence. I could see Creighton. So I think, you know, we saw last year everyone kind of assumed Nova would roll to the title, and then Seton Hall kind of comes out of nowhere. So I think a lot of it will come down to defense and shutting down key players. And if you're playing a team like Marquette, being disciplined about defending the 3-point line. But I think they just, the Nova players are so kind of mature, experienced. I think Jalen Brunson has had an incredible season, running the point, scoring, kind of doing everything. So I think for them, a lot of it will just come down to execution on the defensive end, because offensively they're so poised, and obviously Josh Hart can kind of take over a game when he decides to. So I think it's just going to be matchups and hoping a team that they're playing doesn't get too hot, and really just locking down defensively. Because like I said, offensively, they're tough to stop. They're disciplined. They make the right decisions. They have people who can take over games, break down defenses. So, yeah, for Nova, it's going to come down to kind of stopping. So many of these teams have great momentum right now heading into the tournament, and just kind of putting a stop to that momentum when they step on the floor.
Yeah, Kim, you brought up Josh Hart. You know, he was the consensus Big East player of the year going in. So kind of building off that, do you see him being the Big East player of the year, or do you think Angel Delgado has a good case? Also, who do you think should be coach of the year? Do you think it should be Jay again, or should it be Holtzman, Butler, who's provided a great spark over there?
Yeah, for player of the year, I do think it should go to Josh, just in terms of how many ways he affects the game. He really does everything on the floor. If you look at his numbers, his assists are way up from last year. This year, he's become more of a playmaker, in addition to scoring and rebounding. I think he and just how well Nova has done this year adds to his case. I think he really is the most valuable player in the conference. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you look at Angel Delgado, he's had 23 double-doubles in his last 24 games. That's just an unbelievable stat. I think he definitely deserves to be on the Big East first team. But the player who I honestly thought could challenge Josh Hart the most for the award was his own teammate, Jalen Brunson. I've just been so impressed by him. He's elevated his game so much, and when you watch him, you forget that he's only a sophomore. He's just so mature and so poised at all times. He's maybe impressed me more than any other player in the conference this year. But I do think Josh is deserving of the award as a senior, but look out for Jalen Brunson next year. And then coach of the year is just such a crazy debate. I mean, it could be Coach Wright. It could be Coach Holtman. They have top 10 wins this year. Nova, Indiana, Arizona, and then Providence. I mean, you take the body of work of what he's done with that group after losing so much. I think those three are kind of the final contenders. I honestly don't know who you give it to, which is why I'm glad I'm not voting, because I've seen so many different takes on it. I might give it to Coach Holtman. No offense to anyone else, but I mean, they were a team, too, who lost so much. Everyone, you know, I didn't think they were going to be nearly as good as they are. They brought in a bunch of transfers. They've made it all work. The freshman, Kamar Baldwin, has been one of the most exciting players to watch. I might go with Coach Holtman, to be honest.
Yeah, I know Chris loves himself some Jalen Brunson. I love Jalen
Brunson. He is so good.
How can you not love him?
It's just amazing watching him. Oh, boy.
So this might be a bit of a tough one. The field is pretty wide open. But just looking at the bracket, who do you have advancing to the semis, and who do you have winning it?
I don't know if I can make a prediction on who I think is going to win it this time.
Really?
Semifinals. Gosh. I'm going to go with Villanova Marquette in the top half of the bracket, and Creighton Butler on the bottom half. And an interesting point is Butler has never won a Big East tournament game. They've been in the Big East for 3 years, They've lost in the first round every game or every year. I think this is going to be the year they finally get the Big East tournament win. Oh God, it gets so tricky. I don't want to make a prediction further than that at this point, but I'm going to say Villanova Marquette, Butler Creighton in the semis.
Okay. All right. Can you give us the case for why each of those four teams could win?
Villanova can win because they have the experience. They have two player of the year candidates, as I said, in Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart. And kind of like I was saying before, they're just a team that doesn't really make mistakes. Anytime they're on the ropes, they're so calm. They know how to respond. Marquette can advance to the championship because of how well they can flat out shoot. But like I said before, is their shot going to be on that night? Is it going to be off? If it's on, they can be in the Big East championship game. Butler, I mean, we've seen them knock off Villanova twice this season. I think they're just a really smart team. They execute really well on both ends. But then again, we've seen them have some bad losses. They lost to DePaul. They almost lost to St. John's. Seton Hall beat them at Hinkley the other day. But when they're on, they are disciplined. I think Kamar Baldwin can really impact a game as just a freshman. And then Creighton, another team who was really hit hard by an injury to Maurice Watson, but Marcus Foster has been turning it up another level. He can go out and get 30 anytime he wants. Justin Patton, he's just so different and so talented. But then again, it's like I don't want to count out Providence either because they could be in the semis as well. I think it just shows literally five or six teams could be in the championship game.
You know, this is definitely a tough Big East to decide. It's not really clear cut.
Yeah, Eugene, what do you have?
Tables turned on me. Yeah. I have Villanova going to the semis, Marquette over Seton Hall. Mm-hmm. Butler is going to advance. I actually have Providence beating Creighton, and I know everyone says Villanova-Butler in the final, or that seems to be like a hot pick, but I actually think Villanova loses in the semis.
Real.
And I think Butler will win it all. I have Butler winning it. Butler advances, wins, beats Marquette, and we call it the Big East tournament.
Yep.
What do you have?
I actually have the exact same results. I have Villanova, Marquette, Butler, Providence, and then Butler beating Marquette in the final. I think Marquette's playing too well right now to not get to the final. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because you say Butler-Providence. I think if it is Butler-Providence, Butler has a good chance, but Butler has really struggled with Creighton. So yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to who wins that game.
Right.
Butler has really struggled with Creighton. One of the games was with Maurice and one was without. I was at both of those games as part of the trophy tour. So like we kind of been saying, I think a lot of it comes down to matchups. I think if it is Providence, Butler has a better – the matchup is more in their favor there than if they have to face Creighton again. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah. I don't – it's just insane just trying to wrap your head around all of it.
Yeah, there is a lot of rock, paper, scissors type deal with the Big East teams. You know, one team can smash another and then lose to a completely different team. It's just so weird how it's worked out like that.
Yeah, it's been – it's just so the word I used yesterday was unpredictable. I mean, I never have thought Seton Hall would have gone into Butler on their senior day and beaten them at Hinkle. That was crazy.
Okay, Kim. So let's take a step back from the Big East a little bit, and let's go overall. NCAA tournament, March Madness. Joe Lunardi right now currently has Villanova as the number one seed in the East, and barring an absolute collapse in the Big East tournament, that should probably happen. But if you look under that pod, there is a certain team currently as the number 8 seed, and that would be Northwestern. And as I've read that you are a Northwestern graduate school grad, if Northwestern were to win that 8-9 matchup, and if Villanova wins their 1-16 matchup, who would you root for?
I would definitely root for Villanova. I was only at Northwestern for 1 year, so I can't say I'm like fully invested in Northwestern athletics. I'm definitely much more passionate towards the Big East. I grew up with the Big East because I mentioned before my dad's an official and he was an official in the Big East for 10 years. So that's honestly where I started to love basketball, going to all of his games. So I grew up with the Big East. I've been covering it for the last 3 years. Everyone who knows me knows I love Big East hoops. So if it came down to Villanova Northwestern, I'd be all in Nova Nation. It's a great story. I mean, the year I was there at Northwestern was Coach Chris Collins' first season, and I was able to meet him and his dad, Doug Collins, actually, who was there for a speaking event. So yeah, I mean, I'm so happy for them. It's just hard to think that a team has never actually been to the NCAA tournament that plays in a major conference. So I'm happy for them. I hope they get in. I hope they don't face Villanova or Big East team and win a few games. But if it came down to Big East versus Northwestern, I'm team Big East for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm assuming you'll be at the Big East tournament this year.
Yes, I will be there starting on the second day, Thursday. I have working a few other conference tournaments next week, actually doing the first ever Ivy League tournament right after the Big East tournament. I'll be doing the women's championship game at Penn where I played at the Palestra, so that I'm really excited for that. But I'll be hopping around to a few different conference tournaments, but as of now, I will be at the Big East tournament Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Cool. I covered the last two tournaments over at Madison Square Garden. This year, we're going to have Kayla Smith reporting for ViewBenchMob.com. So certainly, everyone keep an eye out for Kim and Kayla. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening to the State of the Nova Nation podcast and subscribing on iTunes. Kim, where can we find you on social media?
So the biggest thing for Big East coverage is my Twitter account, which is, let me make sure I get it right. I have such a common name, Kim Adams, that I always have to get fancy with like underscores and numbers. So my Twitter handle is Kim_Adams1. So yeah, that's mostly where I'm always discussing Big East hoops. Got the good conversation going last night about which team you wouldn't want to face. So that's a good discussion if you guys want to check that out.
And you know where to find us, at View Bench Mob, or you can follow me, Eugene Rapay, at eRapay5.
And you can follow me, Chris Stanziel, at The Stance Man on Twitter.
Kim, thanks again so much for joining us.
Yes, thanks, Kim.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun, and look forward to seeing your coverage throughout the tournament.
Nova Nation, happy Tuesday. Have a great day, and I hope you all get your train tickets to MSG in order. Also, keep an eye out for the yearly tradition in which I post my giant, comprehensive, complete Big East tournament primer filled with analysis, previews, predictions, and everything. And I mean everything you need to know about the Big East tournament. Always post it the Tuesday before the start of the Big East tournament. So keep an eye out for it tonight.
Yeah, I'm glad your manifesto on the Big East is making its return. And last year it was basically you went full Nostradamus mode predicting the Big East tournament to be every exact game correctly. It was crazy.
I got every single one except I called Butler beating Providence, but Providence beat Butler. But everything else was perfectly correct.
You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. And you nailed the Seton Hall pick too, which was just like saying that if they got to Nova, they would probably win because it's Seton Hall.
They were hot last year. And who knows? You know, I know I said some things when we were talking, but maybe some things might change from this morning to when that post is published. So keep an eye out. Have a happy Tuesday, Nova Nation, and we'll catch you back on Thursday.